Best performance in a decade last year. While there's been some pullback in recent days following the U.S. killing of the Iranian general, they do remain near highs. That performance came despite sluggish economic growth. Getting stocks to move higher, however, may require faster growth. Some see that slug of faster economic activity coming from a possible government ramp-up in stimulus spending. Whichever way you slice it, there is a much greater burden on governments to do more, so said Anik Sen, global head of equities at Pine Bridge Investments. Well, President Trump and Democratic presidential hopeful Michael Bloomberg are both pumping money into the Super Bowl advertising. Mr. Trump's re-election campaign confirmed Tuesday that it has made a Super Bowl ad to buy 60 seconds for nearly $10 million. The news was first reported by Politico. Mr. Bloomberg's campaign said Tuesday it would also air a 60-second ad targeting Mr. Trump during the Super Bowl. The game airs on February the 2nd, the day before the Iowa caucuses, though Mr. Bloomberg is focusing his campaign efforts on states later in the primary calendar. Mr. Trump, who previously aired an ad during Game 7 of the World Series, concluded the year with a war chest of more than $100 million. Mr. Bloomberg has already spent $143 million on TV ads since announcing his presidential bid in November. Well, global stocks faltered and oil prices advanced after U.S. airstrike in Baghdad killed an Iranian military leader. Again, we're back to Mr. Soleimani. The news put a brake on a recent winning stretch for U.S. stocks, with all three major indices falling from record levels and spurred a dash for haven assets like gold and government bonds. Brent crude gained 3.5% at $68.60, capping off a fifth straight week of gains and settling at the highest level since September. Many investors had been acutely focused in recent months on the trade battle between the United States and China and the Federal Reserve's next moves. Risks of a recession appeared to recede after the Fed cut interest rates three times last year, helping U.S. stocks end 2019, notching a string of records. Well, a once discredited type of real estate fund aimed at small investors has come roaring back under new management. These funds, which go by the name of non-traded real estate investment trusts, they buy office towers, hotels, shopping centers, and other commercial property. They tout annual dividends of more than 5% and typically require investors to put in at least $2,500. Individual investors are flocking to these funds in search of higher returns and more stable sources of income at a time when bonds offer minuscule yields. The product is super attractive when rates are low, so said Barry Sternlicht, chief executive of Starwood Capital Group. Investment firms raised $10 billion, that's B as in boy, $10 billion for these funds in the first 11 months of 19. That's according to investment bank Robert A. Stanger and Company, compared with $8.8 billion for 18 and 17 combined. The surge of new money marks a stunning turnaround for these funds, which have been around for 20 years but suffered a more than 50% decline in fundraising a few years ago after industry scandals and criticism. Well, while we own investments, I see here where they are left in the fog amid clashing economic indicators. Pessimists looking for confirmation that a recession is on the way need look no further than the latest manufacturing survey from the Institute for Supply Management. That shows this sector in the deepest slump since a month. The last recession ended back in June of 2009. Optimists should choose the rival Purchasing Managers Index from the IHS Markit for a rosy review of expanding order books and payrolls among manufacturers. The gap between the two creates plenty of opportunity for investors to get things wrong. The Markit survey hasn't been this far ahead of ISM's since the last recession began in 2008's first quarter. It is tempting to think that one must be wrong and we can try to analyze which is better. The lesson of the divergence between these two important measures is all too familiar to investors who closely study the economy. We know much less than we think even about what is currently going on, let alone what will happen next. Well, Julie Chinook, she's 50 years old and owes about $250,000 in student loans. She was happy to get a new payment plan that lowered her monthly bill, but the holders of two bonds backed by her loans were probably less cheerful. The two bonds were due in 2043 and 2054, but Ms. Chinnock and other borrowers were paying less each month under a new government plan that tied debt payments to income. Because borrowers were taking longer to pay off their loans, there was a risk that the bonds backed by the loans wouldn't be paid off in time. Bond rating firms were watching and getting ready to downgrade the highly rated bonds, potentially causing losses for investors. The issue of the bonds and the investors who owned them hatched a plan to avoid the downgrades. Their solution: make sure bonds were paid off in time by extending the maturity dates by decades. The bonds that include a big chunk of Ms. Chinnock's loans now mature in 2083, when she will be 114 years old. Well, we've covered gold, oil, stocks, bonds. Here's an article that says investors lose their taste for wine. Looking to restock your wine cellar after the festive season? Well, depending on President Trump's next move, you may be better off waiting. The price of fine wines traded by merchants in London fell for the fourth consecutive month in December. Excuse me. That's according to the LiveX Fine Wine 100 Index. The industry benchmark, which prices monthly, is now down 3.1% since August. This is all the more surprising because investment-grade wine has historically moved in tandem with gold. Like the metal, it carries no yield and therefore theoretically benefits when yield expectations from other asset classes fall. That has happened when the Federal Reserve cut interest rates last year. While gold hit its highest level since 03 on Monday, fine wine values are falling. One reason for the wine's soaring performance is new U.S. tariffs. In mid-October, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer introduced an extra 25% tax on most still wines imported from France, Germany, Spain, and the U.K., as part of the World Trade Organization's sanctioned response to illegal subsidies received by Airbus. The exceptions were wines with an alcohol content above 14% and those stored in containers exceeding 2 liters. Federal Reserve's policymaking committee saw much less risk of a recession at its meeting last month, when it kept interest rates steady after 3 straight cuts and signaled that it expected to keep low rates unchanged through the year. Minutes of the December meeting released Friday showed that the Fed officials favored keeping rates in the low range of 1.5% to 1.75% to cushion the U.S. economy from slow global growth and the Trump administration's trade conflicts. Officials were also concerned that inflation still had not reached the Fed's target level of 2%. Well, U.S. manufacturing activity fell to the lowest level in more than a decade as the sector was hurt by weakening demand and last year's global economic slowdown. The Institute for Supply Management, that's an association of purchasing managers, said on Friday that its manufacturing index dropped to 47.2 in December from 48.1 in November. Last month's level was the lowest since June of 2009, when the U.S. economy was at the tail end of the Great Recession. Any reading below 50 signals contraction, and the index has been below that level since August. Spending on U.S. construction projects rose a solid 0.6% in November, as gains in home building and government projects offset weakness in non-residential construction. It was the fifth consecutive monthly gain and sharp improvement from a tiny 0.1% October advance. That's according to the Commerce Department's report last Friday. The acceleration was led by a 1.9% rise in home construction, which was more than double the 0.7% in October. Spending on government projects rose 0.9% in November as both activity at the federal level and state and local levels increased. Well, the U.S. trade deficit fell in November to the lowest level in more than 3 years as U.S. exporters rose while imports declined, putting the United States on track to see the first annual decline in the trade deficit in 6 years. Commerce Department said Tuesday that the gap between what America sells and what it buys abroad narrowed by 8.2% in November to $43 billion. Through the first 11 months of 19, the trade deficit is 0.7% smaller than in the same period in 18. If that trend holds in December, the country will finish 19 with a deficit slightly below last year's $627 billion imbalance. I have not seen those figures yet. When I do get them, certainly they'll be reported. Well, the multi-year boom in U.S. auto sales showed signs of easing in 19, with major car companies reporting softer results and industry executives predicting the slowdown would continue into 2020. Automakers reported year-end U.S. sales Friday. Analysts expect the car industry to post a decrease of 1-2% in U.S. auto sales for the year once final numbers are compiled, to around 17 million vehicle sales, defying earlier predictions of a sharp decline. These results came on the day Tesla reported meeting a lofty sales goal in 2019, defying speculation that demand for its electric vehicle cars was dwindling. The strong U.S. economy has buoyed many automakers, while low gas prices and the proliferation of new sport utility vehicles have helped steer consumers toward more expensive models, so said analysts and industry executives. Cheap leases, low interest rates, and longer loan terms have helped buyers fit pricier cars into manageable monthly payments while taking on more financial risk in the process. Well, locally here in North Carolina, UNC Chapel Hill will pay the federal government $4.5 million after the university admitted that it had made accounting errors for its grant funding for 6 years. UNC was overpaid in grant money as a result of the errors, which UNC self-reported and attempted to fix. The university inadvertently retained excess funds, charged salary costs to awards after the award term had ended, and retained excess cash, the Department of Justice announced on Tuesday. UNC's two problems stem from grant closeout procedures from 07 to 11 and its new financial software system from 2014 to 2017. Our office is committed to ensuring that federal grant dollars are properly applied and accounted for, so said Matthew Martin, U.S. Attorney for the Middle District of North Carolina. We appreciate UNC's disclosure of these issues and hope this matter serves as a reminder to other institutions that receive tax dollars that they must have controls in place to ensure federal tax dollars are used as intended. Well, tractor-trailer trucks carrying timber arrive one after another at a factory in Northampton County, where logs are piled up to 35 feet high in rows as long as two football fields. Still more trucks come, carrying sawdust and wood chips from lumber mills or from shredded limbs and small trees these mills won't buy. The logs and chips will be ground up, dried, and turned into cylindrical pellets about as big around as a pencil. Every day of the year, barring any breakdowns at the plant, a truckload of these pellets leaves about every 24 minutes for the port of Chesapeake in Virginia, where they're loaded onto ships bound for Europe to be burned for heat and electricity. John Kepler, CEO of the mill's owner, Enviva, calls this an environmentally friendly solution to climate change, and he's not alone. 10 years ago, the European Commission directed its member countries to derive 20% of their energy from renewable sources, from renewable sources by 2020, and said the burning of biomass such as wood pellets was one way to meet that goal. Well, from Durham, a commuter rail system running 40 trains each weekday between Garner and Durham would cost $1.4 billion to $1.8 billion to build and carry 7,500 to 10,000 passengers a day. That's according to preliminary estimates from the regional transit agency, GO Triangle. The 37-mile commuter rail line would connect the Triangle's biggest cities of Raleigh, Cary, and Durham, as well as the RTP, by following the existing rail corridor owned by the North Carolina Railroad. That's a state-owned private company. GO Triangle says at least 34 miles of new tracks would need to be built in the corridor for commuter trains because existing tracks are already heavily used by Amtrak and freight trains. 27 Amtrak and freight trains pass through the busy stretch of the corridor between Raleigh and Cary each day. The feasibility study from GO Triangle provides the most refined details to date about the commuter rail system proposed by transit plans in both Durham and Wake County. Well, U.S. tariffs against China triggered a slide in imports in November, contributing to the lowest trade deficit in 3 years. U.S. exports also picked up U.S. exports also picked up, so said the Commerce Department on Tuesday. The foreign trade gap in goods and services contracted 8.2% from the prior month to a seasonally adjusted $43.09 billion in November. That was the smallest goods and services deficit since it hit $42 billion in October of 16. Exports boost gross domestic product while imports reduce it, and Tuesday's report suggests trade is likely to make a large positive contribution to economic growth in the fourth quarter after proving a mild drag in the third quarter. Net exports subtracted 14.14 percentage points from the third quarter's 2.1% GDP growth rate compared with a 0.68-point drag in the second quarter. Over the past year, we've seen trade being a small drag on the economy due to weak global growth and the trade war, said Andrew Hunter, who's an economist at Capital Economics. He says, it looks like the drag's starting to fade as global activity picks up and trade tensions with China ease. Well, locally from Cary, Epic Games' flagship video game Fortnite continued to be a cash cow in 19, becoming the top-grossing online video game for the second year in a row. The Cary-based company wrangled an estimated $1.8 billion from Fortnite last year. That's according to news report from Nielsen's Superdata. That beat out other popular video game titles like League of Legends, Candy Crush Saga, and Pokemon Go. However, the 2019 haul represented a 25% drop from the record-setting $2.4 billion Nielsen estimated that Epic made off the game in 18. Epic has been able to keep Fortnite at the top because of continual tweaks and evolutions to the game, Nielsen reported. The game still surpassed other free-to-play titles as a result of consistent content updates and monetization through battle passes. As the report stated, while also highlighting partnerships with other pop culture institutions like Strange Things, Avengers, and Star Wars that continue to pump interest into playing the game. Well, rising tensions in the Middle East threaten to make a tough export market for U.S. wheat growers even harder to crack. Fears of retaliation for a U.S. strike that killed top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani have sparked concern that U.S. wheat growers will lose access to Middle Eastern markets. That's a growing destination for U.S. grain exports. Without continued demand from the Middle East, wheat farmers already struggling following the U.S.-China trade war, and the tough weather of last year may face even more difficulties in 2020. Wheat futures on the Chicago Board of Trade have fallen since the airstrike, dropping 2.2% to roughly $5.50 a bushel over the past two trading sessions. Before that decline, wheat had been on the rise, topping out at the highest level since last summer at $5.60 a barrel. That rally was driven by optimism that the signing of a preliminary trade deal this month would unleash demand from China. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I do hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Bob Sutherland, reading for the Reading Service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, who's served our community so well since 1974. They can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and the broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, North Carolina Reading Service.